And that deals with the attorney and legal practitioners fidelity fund. And we've said it isn't in there now, but we have discussed that legal practitioners is going to be here apostrophe. But we have the right way to do it. So wherever that word appears, put the apostrophe or be inserted. May I have fire away, Chair? Clause 56 merely makes revision to the continued existence of the existing fund. So there's nothing there. Clause 55 deals with the revenue of the fund. And there is also nothing there. Chair, as I've said before, the provisions in this chapter are based largely on the provisions that are already in the Attorney's Act dealing with the Fidelity Fund. There is no need to change much. So they are largely a mirror of what is in the statute book already. Then we get to clause 56, that's the liability of the fund. Now we start to get getting consequential amendments as a result of applicants taking briefs directly from the public if they are in possession of a Fidelity Fund certificate. The first amendment in clause 56 is the fund is liable to reimburse persons who suffer pecuniary loss. We have inserted not exceeding the amount determined by the Minister from time to time a notice in the Gazette as a result of theft, etc. This is a capital that we did discuss on a previous occasion, and the note says that the portfolio committee did not make any final decision on this, but it was a request coming from the Attorney's Fidelity Fund. And a figure was suggested, I think it was R1 million.
Five million rand.
And that's for the committee's consideration. So the fund is liable to reimburse persons who suffer as a result of theft. So any money or property given in trust or to a trust account practice in the course of the practice of the attorney or advocate referred to in section 34.2b, that an advocate who has a fidelity fund certificate. If the theft is committed by an attorney or advocate in that practice, or any person employed by that practice or supervised by that advocate or attorney. B, if the theft is committed by an attorney, advocate, or person acting as executor or administrator in the estate of a deceased person, or if the theft is committed by an attorney, advocate, or person employed by that attorney or that advocate who is a trustee in an insolvent estate or in any other similar capacity. Now, Chair, we're going to find quite a few of these. I think the committee has given us a firm indication when we discussed at the beginning of the bill, should an advocate who has a Fidelity Fund certificate now start doing the work that to date is exclusively really the work done by traditionally by an attorney, and the committee has said we must restrict the advocates who are going to take these directly from the public must stick to the work that advocates traditionally do, court-focused work. So with that in mind, I think paragraph A, it would read, if the theft is committed by an attorney advocate in that practice or any person employed by that practice or supervised by that attorney or advocate. If we go with what the portfolio committee has already said, I think advocates, the reference to advocates in paragraphs B and C would fall away. The footnote there says, the insertion is dependent on the portfolio committee's decision in respect of clause 84.2b, and we've already had an indication. So in the case of B and C, advocates don't traditionally act as executors or administrators, and they don't traditionally act as trustees in solvent estates or in similar capacities. I appreciate the committee's confirmation that we can take advocate out in those two paragraphs.
Comments, questions, honourable members? Can we take advocates out there?
Trustees themselves if
basically discriminated against by having to take, having to have this school doing work that's not reserved for them anymore anyway.
Yeah, I think we know that non-lawyers are also executive in the Eastern states. Banks are, even family members in certain circumstances can administer the deceased estates. So an advocate would, is also capable of doing a deceased estate for a family member and that sort of thing. But the cover for that is in this bill relates to attorneys.
Well, the attorneys are taking an advantage, and that they're covered by the front door, so one of the people wouldn't be covered with. I mean, is that right, actually, given that it's not because they're
with you? So I'm asking you to think about and give directions to Mr. Swart.
So the other professions and banks don't have to do the identity. That's why the attorneys are with them. So that's the whole. And I would agree with the fact that we're taking. Nothing to prevent an advocate acting in his personal capacity as a trustee. They should be all person, but not in the capacity as an advocate.
But now, are they going to be, contributing to the fidelity fund also if they have a fidelity fund ticket? So therefore, they should be included if they have a fidelity fund ticket.
That's the question, and the sense that I've got is that advocates who do take briefs directly from the public and get fidelity funds to the sense that we got from the committee is that advocates who do want to pay briefs directly must confine themselves to litigation and court with what advocates generally do. And we've tried to cover that, but I just remind you in clause 34 to take you back there. An advocate contemplated in paragraph 8.2 may only render those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of this act as determined by the council in the rules.
Your client will have to decide, okay, I want to take the matter further. So as an advocate, you do have that certificate, and you do get a matter at one stage. It might be that your client wants a legal opinion only, and based on the legal opinion, decides to go to court or not go to court. So how do you differentiate between the two?
Yes, that's a valid question. I think if we say that those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of this act as determined by the council in the rules. So legal opinions and things that advocates do, they get ready for court, it's not strictly court work, but it's the issues that advocates have seized them traditionally, and we would think that the rules that the council is going to make it set out in greater detail, that the precursor may only render those legal services rendered by advocates before the commencement of this act. So it will include, let's call it non-court work, but it would be non-court work that advocates traditionally do. That would cover all the things that Ms. Adams is referring to as well.
What work are we thinking of specifically that they cannot do? Because in any event, from my perspective, whatever an advocate do, it ultimately might end up in court. So what is it that we are thinking of that they cannot do?
Yeah, there are a few examples that we've come across already, we've just discussed. I think as we go along, with the one or two more will come to the fore, for instance, should advocates, and we will question those, interrogate those as we come along. Another one that I can think of, advocates, what attorneys are doing at present, which advocates do not do at the moment, is investing of money on behalf of the clients, which some attorneys firms do. I can't think of any others offhand, maybe I can assist.
It can include no free work, financing work,
will include debt collection, liquidations, RF claims, unless, of course, it's litigation that will happen and an opinion in that regard, the lodging of those claims. But of course, when we talk about work for advocates, it's not just restricted to the High Court. I think we must also bear that in mind. We can't bar advocates from appearing in the lower courts. So they will have a right, as they currently do, to appear in any court, for any private. So the list that I allude to would be those who work with any attorneys who do.
So you have those incidents, it's administration of estates, executors of estates, trustee in an insolvent estate, RAF claims.
I understand that's your question, but the point that I wanted to make, so in any event, it's not as if advocates need to work that they have not been traditionally, or something new, so it's whatever they have been doing all along, yeah, so.
So the question still remains, which was asked by Mr. Bassett, should the word advocate be removed from this particular clause of 56?
Yes,
from this, from C, and go online, you will
see. So it's in B and C? Yeah.
We're going to come across quite a few of these as we go through the provisions, and we'll stop at each one.
Okay.
If I may move then to clause 57, it's a limitation of liability of the fund. Fund is not liable in respect of any loss suffered by a family member or member of the household of the term or advocate referred to in section 34 due B, who committed the theft by any partner or co-director in a trust or contract in which the theft occurs, as a result of theft committed by an attorney or advocate whose fidelity has been otherwise guaranteed by a person either in general or in respect of a particular transaction to the extent to which it is covered by the guarantee, by any person as a result of theft committed after the victim of the theft received notice in writing from the counsel or the board warning against the use of the continued use of the legal services of the trust non-practice concerned, or the giving of any money or property trust to that trust account practice, and the person in question has failed to take reasonable steps of being so warned. E, by any person as a result of theft of money, which an attorney or advocate has been instructed to invest on behalf of such a person. Remember, Chair, we had a bit of a debate why with the word contemplated in paragraph D in paragraph E, and it was decided to take those out, I think, correctly, because it caused confusion. I think it is all pretty clear. A, advocate is necessary in that regard. B, there's no reference.
Yes?
Under the of this clause, Chair. B is neutral, C is neutral, no, C is not neutral. We refer to an advocate. D doesn't refer to any practitioner. So the question arises in B. The fund is not liable in respect of any loss suffered by any person as a result of theft of money which an advocate, which an attorney or advocate has been instructed to invest on behalf of such person. Here we come to the investment of monies, and the question again arises, should an advocate be involved in that, and the indications again would seem to be no. And maybe the reference to advocates in paragraph E should be
on
that.
Mrs.
Schipper? I mean, it's not specifically referring to investment practice. I mean, it says any money that the client is instructing to be invested. I mean, I can foresee a possibility if we're going to have our briefing that advocates are going to say we want to deposit up front of X amount of money, which could be quite large, and that your client might then say, well, I want interest on that money then, and they are instructed to invest the deposit until the match is finalized. Now, that should be covered by this, so then you can say about it.
Chair,
okay,
that is a great assumption to make. Because it's such common that advocates are given retainers, like attorneys are given retainers. Of course, we know about retainers. People find its way in there. The competent matters, grab-out matters, they'll be sitting with those money on trust accounts, and it won't be unseeable for clients the same. Invested and similarly, like what the attorneys have, draw your fee as and when you earn it. But the interest in that will then accrue to the federal refund. Will accrue to the fund, which is also covered by the fund.
But then we need to specify here that only those advocates with that fund to the
yes.
In this clause.
So the question may also shift.
Because only they will be covered because they will be contributing to the fund.
Yeah, actually, we wanted to read for an advocate with a fidelity fund statement.
And that's from the drafting perspective. I understand that once you've, the beginning of clause 57 refers to an advocate referred to in section 34.2b. And if you continue, you can just refer to advocate after that. Without having to refer to the full one. But maybe in these circumstances, maybe it would be good to get the advice and guidance of the committee. Maybe we should err on the side of caution and say in each case, advocate referred to in section 34.2b because of the uncertainty that and the newness of all this. It will be a bit cumbersome because it's going to come across quite often. I haven't done it in that what manner, but maybe it is worth doing. Back to subclause 1E. For the purposes of subsection 1E, an attorney or advocate is regarded as not having been instructed to invest money if he or she is instructed by person A to pay the money into a trust account if that payment is for the purposes of investing the money in that account on a temporary or interim basis only, pending the conclusion or implementation of any particular matter or transaction which is already in existence or about to come into existence at the time that the investment is made, and in respect of which the investment, the attorney or advocate exercise exclusive control as trustee, agent or stakeholder in any fiduciary capacity.
Advance? Are we agreed on board members?
It's a difficult one here because if for the last couple of lines dealing with trustee stakeholder fiduciary, which we know, which we would be saying, that would be the domain of the attorney. The rest of this paragraph translates to this. It says simply that where attorney or advocate is doing a transaction in which the means are not needed immediately, then they can put it into an interest-bearing trust account, and it will cover it. So that part needs to reflect an application of the fact that it's done specifically for the purposes of this section. Because it says, for the purpose of subsection 1, an attorney or advocate is regarded as not having been instructed to invest money. And so A is actually saying, in this instance, it's going to be covered. Okay. And in this instance, yes, the advocate is covered, except the last part of the sentence relating to the capacity of. So by deleting advocate, would not be correct. However, it's mixed up. And I wonder whether there's a to separate A1, A2, etc.
I'll work on that then, Jack. That's certainly a different term. And then subclause 6B. For the purpose of the subsection 1E, an attorney or advocate is regarded as not an instructed to invest money if he or she is instructed by a person to lend money on behalf of that person to give effect to a loan agreement where that person, being the lender, 1, specifies the borrower to whom the money is to be lent, 2, being the lender, has not been introduced to the borrower by the attorney or advocate for the purposes of making that loan, and 3, is advised by the attorney or advocate in respect to the terms and conditions of the loan agreement.
Involved
in lending language. So I think we need to flip that whole section and clarify which is advocate version.
With A and B. There's no way advocate should be able to lend.
The sense I would get here is that B shouldn't refer to advocate at all.
Okay, leave
it
in.
Sorry.
No. I'm an advocate with for a certificate and I have money in the account for clients and I'm doing a whole series of transactions for corporate clients, for example. In the course of my instructions, which is one of litigation, I'm instructed by my clients to honor a payment out of the trust fund that I'm holding. Like an attorney can be entrusted to do so, but let's just understand again what the section is saying. It says, in this instance, cover. So it's all understanding of your coverage of the fund. So this is what 6 is also talking to. And it's given the various examples of where you cover for the fund, and it won't be regarded as an investment account where you're not covered. So I just want to be clear in my mind that my understanding of 6 is what I'm saying is, and I suspect it is, because
these provisions relate to instances where the fund is encouraged. Right? So we know that A talks about the interim payments, like your traditional conveyancing transaction. Tick that box. You're covered. Now it goes further. It says B, to lend money, covered. The fund will cover you. And you lend money on behalf of that person, give effect to the loan agreement. And attorneys do this in terms of trust money that they hold. Because it's not their money. And they're going to the client. And the client says, I want you to do this. You do that because it's an instruction of money that is not yours. It's the client's money. It's different from an investment practice where the fund says, we're not going to go outside. So I'm looking at a situation where an advocate that's holding money is in trust. There's two ways to make it considered. One, in the broad scope of what we want the advocates to be doing exclusively with trust money, if it's related to litigation and opinions related to that, then that's ordinarily what they're currently doing anyway. So the committee could say, well, we don't think this loan agreement thing as well should be what attorneys should be, our advocates with FFC 500 fund certificate should be involved. So they could have that attitude and exclude this advocate, which would be fine in the context of how we define the role of the advocates currently. So it wouldn't be a compromise, except that very well consider and say, well, that's where we want to draw the line. We have to be certain. We don't want to even go into the area of loan agreements by which attorneys do. Although the money is not yours, it's held in trust, but this is where you draw the line with the advocates.
That's exactly what I was suggesting we do. I mean, that's completely consistent with what we just said earlier about the role of the advocate, that they can't do what they do before, basically. I mean, they must do litigation. And if you make the litigation and opinion work, you don't need to hold the property to lend money to people. I mean, if they want to choose to lend money to people, they can go to the bank and do it. Or they can go to the attorney and they can do it like that. But I mean, it's not part of the general advocate's work to hold money for purposes of lending. It's not just, I mean, the only purpose for which they should hold money is for the cost for opinion and litigation that they might be.
Yes. B1, 2, and 3. Yeah, that's great. And C is neutral. Clause 7 provides as follows. An attorney or advocate who has been instructed to invest money as provided for in subsection 5 must, as soon as practicable after he or she has received that instruction, but prior to the receipt of the money to be invested, notify the person giving the instruction of the provisions of subsection 1E in the form and manner determined by law. Terms of subsection 8.
Mm-hmm. Is this one okay? Mm-hmm. All right.
So that says,
mm-hmm.
And then paragraph, there's nothing in clause 8, 9, provides that any attorney or advocate who convenes subsection 7 is guilty of an offence, and subsection 7 also refers to advocates. I think that could stay then.
Yes.
And then there was a suggestion by the attorney's fidelity fund and somebody else to put in a definition of family member for purposes of subsection 1A, and for the that is for the committee's consideration, family member in relation to any person for purposes of subsection 1A means his or her parents, second child, including an adopted child or stepchild, spouse, whether by statutory, customary or religious law, and including a life partner. Be the person living with that person as if they were married to each other.
What about in-laws?
Not
a joke. Not a joke. I think we should include in-laws. Do I really like mother-in-law than I can? Are you sure that they benefit?
Why do you even have to like it?
Because then you
might as well give it back
to you when you want
it. You can agree to hate one another. Yeah, let's just make money.
That's the point. You don't like it, you don't start it anywhere.
Well, so nice. Yeah, right. Honourable members, in-laws?
One baby. Funds from the Bible will expect any market by the time a family member is a member of the family. That's very important.
No more documents there.
I would have thought that in-laws is covered under parents. Because it is one of the parents. No.
No. Some people say no ways.
Fund and not the fund. be placed under this clause, and that's really what we do.
I'm just concerned because, I mean, I'm a bit from who is the fund that they are under strain. I mean, interest rates going down. People invest money in separate, in different accounts for the benefit of the client, so then the fund doesn't get the interest. What happens if they simply don't have enough money to fund whatever needs to be funded? Maybe that should be at the beginning, actually, for all of you.
Yes, there are other paragraphs where that might also be very appropriate. For instance, paying the costs related, refunding the bank charges and that sort of thing, that is a discretionary part. And it's done when the fund has the money to do it. I don't know. Perhaps how often that's done. Once a year. Also paying the
costs.
Which one is that, Jen?
Yes, Jay. Yes, Jay. That's got profound implications for the funding model of this whole council, because they're relying on probably going to get a certain amount from the fund to fund the council. And if they don't get that money from the fund, it's going to impact it more on the profession.
Yes, but I don't think the council can simply say
clear that there's certain things that they have to pay no matter what, and there are other things that they have to pay within the available resources and subject to whatever mechanisms you need to put in.
Alright, I'm just... J?
Must.
Must. Okay.
The current board has two representatives, not just here.
I think so. Doesn't. All right, don't worry about this.
Currently, the attorneys at Christ at the Board of Control consists of the seven presidents of all societies, as the board, and the three members of each society elected annually. So it's only the
money being paid over on the investments of private investments of individuals. That's fund one. Now, on what basis can they get? A client comes and invests money, instructs you to invest for their interest. Now the fidelity funds must be part of that person's interest to be paid over to the fund. Why? On what basis?
The reason the chairperson is because they're covering. Even in that instance, the fund is covering. The fund is safe. But
we are
liable implicitly 5%. So it's in that context, because they cover it.
Okay.
Effectively an insurance premium for investing their money. What's the risk of doing?
Currently, I think the attorney can give the client a choice and then he signs that, that I can invest your money, but you won't be covered, but you will get the interest. But it has to be in writing and the attorney is supposed to explain to the client to this. But then
it's not a
it's common law.
It will be covered. So if we want to contemplate that, which we should, I don't see how you can compel people to have something that maybe they don't want.
Chair, the current scenario with this exclude the investment trust fund, where the interest is signed, this is going to be fantastic. Even in the current trust account, that interest, who is it? And that's the question. The anonymous smart rate, what the rate about, whose interest is it with? You know, if you're looking at that basic level, a client is paying money for service. That interest is going to the federal fund to cover this.
That's general.
Yeah, that's general.
Well, that's general kind of stuff, yes. But if you specifically have to invest money for a client, then that's what we're talking about in this section.
Even in the current situation, there are premiums that are coming out from the federal fund and going into the attorney's insurance and the energy fund. So, the attorney is covered for tests, the attorney is covered for negligence.
They're covered.
Negligence, theft, in the normal course of trust accounts. And all of the funds are saying, really, the client wants the benefit of the interest. And you have revenue anyway. And for doing that, secure funds. And in the context of that, I think we need to look at whether it's reasonable or unreasonable. As you look at what the fund is doing anyway for non-investment trust accounts, covering the entire amount, of course now saying no, it's not subject to Chapter 5 measures.
Mm-hmm. 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 Tell you how to get a limit liability, right? You know?
Is there anyone on the board who was in this position? Is there anyone on the board who is in this position, the place of the situation, of having been convicted and still has an appeal pending? No. So we don't have a problem. Unless he or she says to go out tonight and commit a crime.
Chairperson, if you put in a court of first instance, then these people would be cleaner than members of parliament. Because members of parliament, in terms of the constitution, is just A, B, and C, with obviously the appeal also part of it. So I'm just raising it. I mean, parliament is a higher institution than parliament to deal allowed. I'm not saying that we should open it now for. Even in the constitution, it says specifically about clause C that this whole clause falls away after 5 years, after you have completed the sentence. So I'm just raising it. The members of parliament is entitled to become members of parliament after they have served the sentence after 5 years, and now with this board we are saying it must be cleaner.
Mr. Chamber?
conviction is upheld on appeal, then they will still be, and that's really when that part comes in. If they're convicted in an appeal and it's upheld, and the appeal is not upheld, and the conviction stands, then we can maybe look at the constitutional provision 5 years after the sentence or something like that. But I don't think it necessarily precludes. Yeah, it might. I can't recall whether the constitution specifies whether the appeal is consent. That is a valid point. I mean, how can we make laws and the lawmakers have our health to less standards than people are really legislating about?
The people are seeing millions and millions direct.
Chair, the board members isn't board members as a career, as a livelihood. They do have other jobs. So MPs, it's your job, it's your life, it's your income. If you're barred from doing that, you know, it has a higher impact on your life than if you're disqualified from being a board member.
On another occasion, we will discuss with you that last thing. There's a view among some of us that actually that should be the case. And if you leave this council, you will not return. You should be in a position to go out there and find other opportunities. But that's for another occasion. All right, Ms. Adams, the next important point, should we deal with this? To be put in by a court of first instance, as proposed by Mr. Bassett, and then qualify it by saying after 5 years it's falls away.
I'm proposing, I thought it was proposed by me.
Oh, sorry.
The other day, I don't
know. Because it's in the Constitution for MPs. Yes. So it doesn't mean that the designating body will necessarily re-designate him or her, but he or she should be qualified to be designated or re-designated. I don't know. Mrs. Schaefer?
The whole point I was making regarding the conviction of the appeal paper was to try and avoid a situation where you have attorneys arguing that now they don't have to be off the board because they are still awaiting an appeal. And you can have somebody sitting on the board for 5 years while they have an appeal heard and put every court possible and so on and so forth. So it was my suggestion on that in the other provision the other day. And I still think we should maybe go that for certain issues because, as you correctly pointed out, the person sitting on a board is the cloud hanging over their head for 2 or 4 or 5 years. And if they will qualify next time around to be back again. And I just think, I know what's going to happen. Otherwise, if you really want to get somebody who wants to play the system, then they will do that. They'll say, I've got an appeal pending. I haven't been convicted. It's not final yet.
But at least they're not there, as has been pointed out, not a good job. There's no detriment to him. You do have an absence in the council, to have a rest and carry the case. Well, we sincerely hope that nothing's going to happen. We know cooks on the fidelity board.
Ms. Adams' point is that we have those people here.
Yes, but you know, her argument is just complicating matters.
I didn't use the word you in 6 months. I Ms. Adams.
Yeah. Listen, I was raising that with regards to appeal. That in the Constitution it says that if the appeal is still pending, it's section 47 and 106 of the Constitution, it talks about that. So I raised this point with regards to appeal and not that come after 5 years you're entitled to be on the board again.
Any wants to do his finances. Okay, well, I'm just making sure.
The election of the gifted young politician, Mr. Malini, and how his position would be
important. Yeah, well, yeah. I think it is that it was in some of the changes.
When the committee deliberates on this matter, they should also look at the purpose of the fund, which currently has some close to 3 billion rand, the act of the public interest, protecting the public. I'm not saying that the responsibility of politicians are less important.
Honourable members, where do we go? Court of first instance.
Clarify whether it is a court of instance or whether it is after the appeal has been heard or the time period. That's what I said initially. Then I think it was you, Mr. Chair, who was quite adamant that you shouldn't have there at all if you're being convicted of a court of instance. So I don't really feel pretty strongly one or the other. But the point is we need to be clarified. Now, I mean, the committee must make a policy decision on whether it's doing. I mean, I do think it's a valid point that if the Constitution allows members of Parliament to oversee the entire country's budget and legislation, are allowed to wait until the deal is finished, then perhaps we should make a consensus. Okay.
Well, this thing, whatever applies to an MP applies to these problems.
What about the spending that person and then have an acting person in that position? Once the person has been found guilty, court of first instance, and then have an acting person in that position.
Request by the body which or person who elected or designated the grant. On good cause shown.
If we're specifically saying that the conviction is only once the appeal has been finalized or the fund is elected, then there's not reason that can't be a good cause. Because you'll say, well, I'm not excluded from being here. This is
what's the matter you have to take up with designation or not on the board? If he's designating authority designates, we want you off the board. Are you saying the board, the designating authority can't do that? And that's not saying that the person concerned is guilty or not guilty. All they'll be concerned with is how does this reflect on us. And this is not a political party act. There is a huge difference there. The political parties can escape around these things and find reasons for getting around it. Whereas the designating authority, I don't think they have that leeway, politically.
In reality, when you talk about the designated party, the attorney's profession, earlier I talked about, it's very difficult
people have to deal with this issue because it's become a political hodgepodge. That's reality. Because there are instances where there's been massive fuss about where members are convicted of offences of unprofessional conduct and the like, and whether they can cannot be a council member on the provincial or council. And among that, many have run some racial lines, and it's not as simple as the committee considering a fine for the fact then you're suspended, then you're appealed. And what needs to be also factored in is that conduct that you pay and benefit, and you know, if you suspended, you better tell the meeting, you can't get allowance, because you're, you know, you just kind of factor that in. Because you're going to get somebody else who's going to be wanted during that meeting phase, who would be paid stipend and allowance and accommodation for telling the various meetings. So you just need to factor that in so that it isn't an owner of the financial burden on the company. And also, when to align the provision of the council, because it would be unwise to give due preference to fund only when you are considering the eligibility for council members, and they need to speak together in terms of qualification criteria. So we just need to align that as well. And I'm not certain that we have it.
So the next composition of council, removal, termination of office, in terms of section 8. On account of conviction for any misconduct or offence under this Act, which in the opinion of the Council demands it. Section 12, removal from office at the Council. Mr. Dyer is saying we should be consistent.
This is how these discussions originated. The court in first instance, so we had really started on that approach, but now we other questions are coming up which we will have to also factor into for the council.
Yeah, I see it only refers to conviction and its act. Yes. So murderer could be a person.
Clause 12, we said we're going to limit it to finding for misconduct because the conviction for an offence is dealt with in Clause 8.
Clause 8.
And that's where...
No one raised an objection then. So, well, I think Mr. Dyer is right. We need to be consistent. Whatever we agree to in 65C, we should also include in 8C, 81C.
That
has to be consistent.
What we did get instructions for 8 was to include quarter for the instance.
Oh, did we?
Yes. 81C. When we discuss...
Oh, sorry. 2C. Beg your pardon. 2C.
When we discuss Clause 8, that's where the Court of First Instance first came up, and we were asked to put Court of First Instance in there.
Convicted by the Court of First Instance. Yes, Mr. Shep, I'm hearing.
What about if we say in line with the Constitution, convicted, and appeal is finished, or time period when appeal has expired, provided that prior to that time period, or prior to the appeal having been heard or expired, the designating authority may suspend, or the council may suspend, and the designating authority may designate an alternate until that period. So basically, we allow the designating authority then specifically to nominate another one if the council decides that they want to suspend it without suspending it. Bearing in mind it's not a full-time job, and it's an additional, it's allowance and stipend.
Okay. they're not just saying that today or the next point, they're actually, they're not willing to be actually happy if they work. I want to take them to be.
Well,
then
get it back
to
actually
say
it quickly.
They aren't doing the work.
They won't be attending meetings, and that's what the stipend is meant for, to cover their expenses in attending meetings or in being out of their practices. So if they aren't doing that, then why should they be remunerated?
Recap, that option would be
all of us to visit that company.
Until the appeal is filed for the time period for the appeal
standard.
And then the making authority can designate a replacement pending the finalisation of the appeal or the expiry of the time period for it.
Make it read now in accordance with the line of clause 12. on account of any finding of misconduct. That's what we said in clause 12. And similarly to clause 12 in paragraph D, person can be removed from office on account of a request by the body, on good cause shown by the body or person in question, or an alternative request by the body on good cause shown upon confirmation thereof by the High Court. In clause 13, the committee requested us to change to replace the reference to High Court with the reference to Ombud. There's no decision on which of these two options in the committee. That is planned. And then paragraph F in clause 12, a person, in terms of clause 69(1)F, a person may also be removed from office on sequestration of his or her estate. But that we're going to take out if, on the strength of what the committee said in clause 12. Sequestration of estate is dealt with in clause 65. If one to go back to in clause 65(2), the following persons are disqualified from becoming or remaining members of the board, unrehabilitated and solvent. So we don't need to say it in clause 65(f). So that's all the same as what we did with clause 12. What we've also added in clause 69.
I presume that the final order of
separation wouldn't apply for those provisions. 65. If you are an unrehabilitated insolvent, then there would be final orders. Also in clause 69, we've really just added what was also added to clause 12. If the board has commenced proceedings for the removal of a member, it may suspend that member from office. A member who is suspended from office may not perform or exercise any of the powers or functions of that office or receive allowances. The board must follow due process of law if it intends to remove a person from office. So these are really just mirroring of what's in clause 12.
So it's covered in. Mr. Swartz and then Mr.
Smith. We've also again got this clause E, engaging in any activity that undermines the integrity of the board, which we just again on to. Yeah, I mean, you've got your misconduct, you've got your criminal case, everything.
What would be activity that undermines the integrity of the board?
Yes.
clause 31 that deals with the committees and board. This is also just for the committee's consideration and guidance. If you originally read the board may do a whole range of things, but surely the board must appoint an executive committee and then the others all the members of the subclause 2. Members of the committee must elect and appoint a chairperson unless the board has appointed a chairperson. There's a proviso there to say that the chairperson, the board, picks a particular chairperson, the executive member of the executive committee referred to in subsection 1A.
Is there a deputy or not?
Board. It's not a council. It's not to run the entire institution. And can I
allow the committee to appoint their own chairperson, committees of the board? Should we not rather say the board should appoint the chairperson and then and the group?
Chair, yes, on the council, we changed it that the chairperson of the council is ex officio, chairperson of the executive committee, and deputy chairperson is ex officio chairperson of the. So I think we'll need to do a chair as well.
I'm talking about committee of the board. This provision in 2 says that members of the committee must elect their own chairperson. So they form a separate committee of the board, and then those members elect their own chairperson. But it would not maybe be better for the board to elect the chairperson of a committee instead.
Given the fact that the board under sub-4 may at any time dissolve any committee, that's what Mr. Schaefer is proposing in the extent that the board chooses the chair.
Who may be members of the board or other persons. So, you know, it should be somebody else, I would say, from the board who is chairing this committee.
Chairing that particular committee. Okay. That does make sense. Which is not that they don't turn around and say we over-prescribe. But I don't know. It's fine.
Just to get back to point 63, are we going to ask what the population about the practitioners, how many must be applicants, or what was the decision that we see there?
One advocate given that it's only advocates of validity fund certificate and have it.
So you're happy with one advocate? Yeah. And the advocates are going to be happy with that?
Yeah, but not all advocates.
Only one thing I would do. Yeah. For us, okay. Are we all okay with that? Four attorneys, one advocate.
Executive committee, are we going to continue with that?
On the executive committee?
No.
One advocate? All right.
All right. Yeah, that'll take us to 72. 72.
There's nothing there.
Nothing there.
73, nothing there.
Then we come to 74, and that's contributions to fund by legal practitioners. Again, it's a very consequential amendment, but I think it's important to go through each one in its area just to make sure that we've done it correctly, Chair. Every attorney practicing in his or her own accountable in partnership and given advocate referred to in section 3042B must annually, when he will be obliged to obtain a deposit, pay to the council the amount as may be fixed by the board from time to time in respect to the cost of group professional indemnity insurance arranged by the board pursuant to the provisions of 57 and any other non-refundable amounts as may be fixed by the board. There was a proposal here from Eskom.
Yeah.
factors are contradictory as 1A provides for payment to the fund and 5 to the council. He suggests payment should be to the fund directly.
Should it go to the fund directly on the minimums?
The Attorney's Act just say must be paid to the council.
I mean, this is what these people have been doing today. Showing up each day.
So, 1A and 5 need to be brought into line, and the suggestion is that it goes directly to the bank.
So, one possible one issue that this is actually a mechanism to control and see who's applying for the fidelity funds. Is there no merit in that? Who has got fidelity funds to be good? So that the couple can then keep a check on it.
That's a wonderful argument. So there's a bona fide, a good reason, then they go and argue the health is important.
Raised by me and invested in the idea, okay.
They make a lot of money out of it, don't they? The LSM. 40 million. And simply by, I'm now serious, they perpetuate mechanisms. People who need fidelity funds to get must apply to the council, with an attorney or a few advocates who are going to do it. It's a gift on the argument just to give the council just a way to see with all attorneys and taking direct work from the public, having cracked the line for their certificate, and then because the LSA has been charging an agency fee, let's allow that practice to continue.
I just wonder how they make that much, because I mean, how much do you have to tend to pay that much to apply for it to fidelity funds to get, do you? Mm-hmm. So where's the agency fee of the 2 million coming from?
Can I clarify this, please, for permission? The agency fee is restricted to the collection of trust interest.
Mm.
Passing over of that to the fidelity fund. It's not related to fidelity funds. It's relating to interest from trust accounts that you collected and sent to the provincial society. They take a 40% cut as an agency fee.
What they've been doing all these years.
What they've been doing. And then it's been sent over to the fidelity fund, and all of that is 42 million.
And they keep their cut.
Yeah, I think that's less respectable than what I thought it was.
Look, Mr. Flagg is right. We need to be clear in our minds with the stress that comes from the stress.
That way the control mechanism is coming in from the council. The council, if we take the council then sees that people are applying for the certificates and that they're And here there is an agency.
Okay, so we can flag it as being suggested. I'm sure there is a good reason that's what's like that in the Attorney's Act. Maybe we must go back to the profession and...
Thank you, sir. Perhaps.
may continue the rest of the suspension amendments. Any legal petitioner referred to in paragraph A must, in respect of that year, pay half of the sum. If any legal practitioner referred to paragraph A commences to practice on or after 1 July in any year, must, in respect of that year, pay half the contribution which is payable in terms of that.
But well, it's easier, all we're doing is taking much attorney and replacing it with the practitioner. All the way through 5, eh? Yeah.
And I wonder whether we shouldn't say continuous legal practitioner referred to in Section 74 or referred to. Yes, I think we must be consistent with our referrals back to the legal practitioner in paragraph.
I think we should do that. Okay. All right. We'll do that.
And similar to what we said earlier today.
Although it's defined, a legal practitioner. It is defined, so I don't know. Where we are, do you think we should still make the reference?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. A division of the High Court.
Yeah, that is in line with.
I think that's missing. 2-10. Fine, it is okay. Yes. 75.
Yes. The
legal practitioner's name.
Consequential amendments clause in 476. As in 477.
Right,
and that takes us to
478.
And those procedures for instituting claims against the fund, there were no comments and no amendments required.
Right.
79 is actions against the fund, and just changing.
Which one again?
Which one has its clause? 81, 82, and 83, there were no changes or no amendments necessary. And that brings us to the end of chapter 6.
No person has a claim against the fund in respect of theft unless written notice is given within 2 months of the claim to the debtor.
Short is, this is Sam, and if any of that is confirmed, I'll prefer to go with it.
Okay, I keep saying it's been this one, but that's 2 months.
Yeah.
And for 3-4 period, and I wonder that it's been this one, but then for 2 months, it's been this one.
After they come away,
it's not that short. So, you could become away after
5 years? Yeah. Yeah, that's what you'll say, I think. Yeah. Okay. Alright, chapter 7. It's 1 minute to 11. He had said at 11. Let's take 15 minutes.
Before we reconvene, could I just maybe make notes aware of the latest development in the UK?
Yes, which is what?
It's very short, I could read it very quickly. It relates to the issue of the ombud and the fact that they're considering they have lots of ombuds there, and considering just having a single ombud for the regulator. But more importantly is development relating to briefs to various applicants, and now their entrenching process even further relating to Article 7, the rights to deal directly with the public, and its constraints in the latest debate. Which is coming more and more acceptable in the UK. Send a link for
that. The very example on which I certainly made my mind up on this issue also emanated from England, and therefore I'm interested to see what the next step is, because it's precisely there that the specialist litigation bars were formed and took direct work from the public, and if this is now expanding, it's very, very interesting. Something else I would really like, but if you have it in written form, it's something else I'd like is the development of the cab rank rule. Thank you.
My recollection
Supreme Appellate Court with consensus. I've got to say that we can save 10 months.
Would we not like to have a general thought of the change of course?
We could do that. I do recall I think we did say that on a previous occasion, yes.
Should have a penalty clause?
So then all the penalty clauses will come. There is a penalty clause somewhere later on in the law.
Okay,
thank you.
I don't know
whether this is a question.
Sure.
Did you question. LASA indicated that they sometimes appoint practicing attorneys on a fixed term contract.
In regard to clause 9, it's consequential in nature. Let me go through it. An advocate other than an advocate referred to in section 34.2b may not receive or hold money or property belonging to any person in the course of that advocate's practice or in respect of any instruction issued to the advocate by an attorney or member of the public. That's consequential in nature. And I can go on to subclause 10.
Mm-hmm.
A legal practitioner in the full-time employer of the state or the South African Human Rights Commission, a state attorney, legal advisor may receive or keep money or property belonging to any person except during the course of employment of such legal practitioner within the state, only on behalf of the state and no other purpose.
But does that cover municipal law aspects? Are they called law advisors, state law advisors, municipal law? That's the first question. The second question, I remember that Human Rights Commission specifically asked for an inclusion. Does it not also apply to other chapter 9?
Yeah.
If you have just proposed chapter 9, what about the public protector? It's a prohibition on them holding any money, but it really would apply to all.
I was just thinking about here whether a person in full-time employment of the Human Rights Commission could possibly still remain. Well, if he falls under the definition of legal practitioner or as attorney, he must have a fidelity fund certificate. Otherwise, he wouldn't fall under the act, and he wouldn't be allowed to practice.
See, the public protector was investigated. She admitted as much. They are all aware. Now, we didn't interrogate them. We were satisfied that, look, she's got married before acting as investigating. And we left it at that. Perhaps we needed to go a little further into it. I don't know. So the point is relevant.
Shall I? Speaking aloud, maybe it is relevant, and I can just check. I think in terms of the South African Human Rights Commission Act, the Commission can litigate where the public protector doesn't have that, and the Commission agenda, the Agenda Commission also doesn't have that.
Because the
it that we'd be liable to see in those parts. I think we have that issue. The recognition of the traffic protector. We don't send the state, the traffic protector, litigating with the result of receiving some money from the system. We don't put in any holding of the traffic. That's why I think it's worth it.
Thank
that then goes again to the question. Do they receive trust money and defined here? Who receives it? Where are the
Look, if they're representing a little community,
that's the whole idea behind empowering them to litigate.
No.
If you don't have to litigate, there's no damage being paid to them.
Okay. Would
those
damages go to the human rights commission?
Via the commission.
The key thing is that they will not hold a trust account and a business account. They will probably only have their business account. They're not required to hold a trust account. They don't have quite their human rights certificates. All these bodies will not have two separate accounts after turning them to trust account business account. They would litigate that if one business account, the money would come in and that will go out to the clients.
The Human Rights Commission did undertake to come back with specific amendments to this committee on what they wanted. I don't know whether we have received.
We'll follow up on this because they haven't done so.
As far as I'm aware, they haven't done so.
No, they haven't. You may need to engage with them further.
Is Dennis Buckmore going to present to us certain of their thoughts on the SAAIC amendment bill FY2? But it might not be soon enough.
We need to acquire my security here.
Yeah.
And we get further input from the issues.
One could cover this quite easily by just saying, or Chapter 9 institution where applicable, then you cover everyone. So, or you refer to the Constitution, and then it's a catch-all phrase. But that's, I think we need to just decide firstly where the Chapter 9 institutions are covered at all.
Chapter 9, Mr. Smith.
Well, that's what we would say, we're applicable.
Yeah.
Or we're relevant or something like that. But it just seems strange to mention them in
June.
What is it that the legislation? When you read it, you're going to say,
why? That says it's to draw every file, application for issue, for delivery of certificates. It's also consequential in nature. Sub 1A. Sub 1B is at the request of the LSSA, they ask for the inclusion of the provision which is already in the Attorneys Act, and the committee asked us to, the committee, in a sense, was engaged with it, but they would like to consider it, and this is the option. Every legal practitioner referred to in paragraph A will prove for the first time practices as such, must within period and after payment of the fee determined by the California rules. Legal practice may be enforced, approved by the council, determined in the rules. So that's an option for consideration.
So the advocates or the law students leaves university with his degree, goes to a court, asks to be registered and enrolled, and then goes to the court and says, I want to receive direct briefs from the public in terms of this act. Should he then also, as a legal practitioner, do this course?
Yes, and you need to know how to manage this practice. You've got a fidelity account, you've got to have a trust account, a business account.
You just have completed your law degree, you probably have a student loan to go back, you haven't stopped practicing yet, you have to commence practicing, no money, and now you've got to pay a fee to go and do another course.
I hear what you're saying, but up front, you should be informed way back that you'll be required to do this.
or any result of the search,
to call about something. Yeah.
That's right.
3C.
Yes.
And then 4, any money held in the trust account or trust account practice in respect to which the identity of the owner is unknown and which is unclaimed after 1 year, given those words, request of attorneys for identity account. I think the committee should have any problem with that.
So clause 5, consultation.
Yes, and that is consequential.
Yes.
Yes, that's consequential.
Can I turn to
yes, Mr. Sorry,
some five. Was that coming from the Law Society? That this is the Council of the Board of Fire only to inspect documents relating to your fronting. And is there another provision from the Act that allows them to investigate negligence law? I think that's the point. 87.5, they say the clause is not sufficiently wide to enable the council to inspect practice or another reason that a council matter, for example, to investigate allegations of improper conduct. And what springs to mind immediately is negligence, where you allow a claim to be prescribed, for example, and that says that disciplinary action is that. It is recommended that a section be introduced into the bill giving the council the power to inspect the affairs of any firm for purposes of an investigation into allegations of improper conduct. So that is something that we might have to look elsewhere, but it's already with the council security issues. But I just want to mark that so that we team from your side you're not clear what other improper conduct is found within the interest. But you say it might be something to provide for under the discipline clause. So I mean, you have those incidents of negligence, you know, where discussion of claims.
I think the idea is not that the board investigates general negligence, even if it results in problem with their money. I think that would be a bit of a long stretch for their function.
The council will that. And the fire pain. So we're not able to say the board should be down against the council. I think it's the council. But so come into play somewhere when we look at this as saying what's the present suggestion? Does the do the law start to have a wider power to investigate, or is it only related to trust that we trust the funds?
Here, the law societies do not go in a little bit of the right inspection has to be pre, I don't know what,
preempted. Can't go on a fishing
expedition. Yeah, they can't be on the track. They have to be a compliance and there's a form which has to be followed, it's an attribute. That gives them the authority to inspect.
But they must have a statutory power, actually, that is the statutory power in terms of their statutory bodies that gives them the right to act on a complaint. The mere fact that there's a complaint doesn't entitle them to go into another. And the concern is that the attorney against whom the complaint is laid will try to hide the information that's described as something. So, am I stretching it, or is it not going to be easy? But that's what the Law Society is asking. So let's just bear that in mind and look at that.
I thought we had to discuss it in
only have to keep their files for a certain period of time. So what would be the purpose of keeping your files? And what would be available for the period?
Well, what it was for summons is if you get sued for negligence or something, you need to be able to have to.
When it comes to that more general concerns for the board,
why would the board want to change it? That kind of significance, I'm not necessarily opposed to it, but I think we need to think whether it's an issue or vote at that more general power. The board's reasoning for the 86 provision, 88 provisions, was that the law authorities don't take enough action or quick enough, and that increases their risk. So it could be a case to be made up similarly with negligence claims that also puts the board at risk. But I'm not sure we need to look into that.
Functions and powers and use of income of the fund is to make a contribution to what the fund is insurance the emitted from. So the master premium that is funded by the fund, from the board, from the fund. And those are negligence. So to limit negligence, the fund has a direct inherent vested right of risk.
That's why we need that general power investigation. So that tells that insurance that covers negligence, then we rely on actually to decide. It's going to be necessary discipline, but there are consequences for the fund.
Surely, I mean, surely that fund, the board and the council should be working together. So, I mean, maybe they don't, but I mean, they should be able to, and if they're forced to work together and both have rights, then they'll actually have to take other into account.
What? I mean, it's
well,
like
trying to
assume
both
sides
so far.
Yes.
So we're forcing them.
As you can see, we're working
in last year. Okay. Yes, are we still on page 8 or are we moving on?
Page, we're on page 75.
Oh.
And 75B is where we have
consequential. Right.
And that takes us to page 8.
Right.
There's still this trust money or trust property of trust account credit is subject to paragraph G and allowed to pay the credit. So a trust account or any trust account practice does not form part of the assets of trust account practice of any attorney or member thereof or any applicant referred to in section 32B and may not be attached by the creditor by any attorney, partner or member or advocate. That's thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
Yes, sir. S89 Court, that's to prohibit operation of trust accounts in the High Court by application by the Council of the Board and on shown prohibit any legal practitioner referred to in section 84.1 to be obliged to communication of the fidelity fund specifically for operating in any way on that plus account of that point to rate the bonus. And this, these amendments were in line with the comments of the SSA. Clause 90 is appointment of the rate bonus to the tax account. Also consequential in nature, if any legal practitioner referred to in section 84.1 is not to be arrested for the or whatever, heightens the application made by the council board or any other person having an interest in the trust helps with that legal practitioner or trust account practice, appoints a curator bonus to control and administer that part of any rights and functions that perform to make it fit. Maybe I can ask Mr. this is the request of the LSSA, just to summarise what the LSSA said there. Although there are provisions, as far as I remember, in Section 78 of the Attorneys Act, in terms of which the master plays a role, the LSSA said that those provisions are problematic and understand to answer.
Thank you, Chair. The LSSA pointed out that the experience is that the master refuses to make appointments under Section 78.9 of the Current Attorneys Act on the grounds that the regulations referred to in Section 18.1.1e have never been promulgated. The LSSA suggests that the clause be amended to incorporate the procedure which is currently adopted by the Law Society, namely that the rights and duties of the curator be incorporated in a court order with the master's office not being involved,
This means that the council retains control over the appointment of the creditor and the manner in which the piratorship is exercised. And it will avoid delays which occur now in the appointment of a creditor and enables the accounting records of the attorneys to be taken over without delay by the creditor.
That's the euphemism of
we can tell you stories.
So that's largely what this provision is about. But let me just go through it. There are in sub clause 2, where the legal practitioner contemplated subsection 1 is an attorney and was practicing partnership or as a member of a company with another attorney or attorneys. Court must allow the trust account to remain under the control of the main partners. We're not referring to advocate there because we're talking about partnerships. Subclause 3.
If you were down a little
bit.
Yes. Okay. Right.
Subclause 3. If a trust account practice is sequestrated, liquidated, or placed under business risk procedures, I think it's to bring it into line with the terminology in the New Companies Act.
Oh,
so that's what that is about. And then the rest of the provisions here relate to the master, the division of the master and the assertion of court. And subclause 5 must come out because that is related to the master as well. And subclause 6 provides that nothing in this section or section 89 may be construed as preventing any attorney who is practicing in partnership with a legal practitioner referred to in subsection 1 who is an attorney. So this is exclusively with attorneys and practicing in partnership, so advocates don't come into the question.
Your footnote is saying you must speak to a professional about this
as well. We've done that, Chair, sorry.
Have you?
Yes, that's about the master.
Oh, I see.
And
we
should get confirmation from them.
Okay.
Then we go on to clause 91.
And I think when the review happens in terms of all the structures, a lot of those things, in a certain way, which are not
the top. It'll be part of the whole work to do.
And what can Mr. Dyer's really change? At some point I just want to get that from you, but maybe I'll literally change that. I want to be quite sure that I'll refer to the serial name. What the instrument was that they used to discontinue down the camera in is that my normal kind of thing?
Was that in all
the changes.
No changes. Chapter 8.
Double that.
Yes.
And what are you in the plan?
was there.
Why?
I think it was a sense of which I'm a little ditched about why this.